Well, Alex Marquez always said that he'd finally win a Grand Prix when his brother let him. And I think Mark may have been more right than he realised. Welcome back to Tank Slappers. I'm your host, Trey Harrison. Glad you could join us as ever. Coming off the back of what was a very newsworthy and I guess you could say, as the kids say, an iconic Spanish Grand Prix. Over 100,000 in the house at Jerez on race day to watch a Spanish winner on a Ducati. But not the one you were probably expecting, depending if you're maybe for a betting man or not, as Alex Marquez finally, after 93 attempts in the top flight, that's a funny number, he finally gets his first Grand Prix victory in the Premier class. And hey, he didn't have the easiest of ways of doing it after a pair of crashes on Friday and having to start from the second row of the grid, because we had a Yamaha on pole as well. It was all kinds of funny stuff this week, which we'll have to break down and get into over the next 45 minutes or so. But joining me once again, we have Richard Asher. Hello, Rich. How's it going, mate?
Good. Can't complain.
Yeah, but we're the weird ones at the moment. I'll let you in behind the curtain a little bit here. It's 7 in the morning UK time as I'm recording this, but so we'll figure it out as we go along. And joining us from a country that thankfully has working electricity at the moment, it's Yuri Pujamon. How's it going, mate?
Hello, it's not 7 a.m. here. I mean, it was about 3 hours ago. So yeah, good. I'm happy here.
Yeah, you and me both. You and me both. All I'm saying is I might be getting a coffee since this recording is over. And I'm not even normally a coffee man, but here we are. We'll figure it out. But we have to talk first about Alex Marquez, the man of the hour, your new championship leader. Again, the second time this season, he's now taken the overall points. We'll get into why specifically in a minute, because if you're up on your maths, you've probably already figured out why. But yes, Alex Marquez finally in the winner's circle, up and down weekend, couple of crashes on Friday, but comes back strong in the race. Great start, follows by Fabio Quartararo, which again is still a weird sentence to say in 2025. But Yuri, it's finally happened. Alex Marquez finally breaks the glass ceiling that after years and years of, you know, struggling a little bit in the top flight, maybe not finding the right place or finding the right environment to be able to win. He's finally got one with Gresini, and I think it's been a long time coming this season and long deserved.
Yeah, I would say that we've been comparing both Marquez brothers for ages since they both joined the World Championship. And I was thinking about that Alex win, and I would say, I know it sounds a bit risky, but what I'm going to say, but I would say that this win, it has a lot of ingredients from his brother, like crashing twice on Friday, jumping on the bike again and make the lap record straight away. And also, I mean, when Mark crashed, Alex was in front. So, and he made just one overtaking to the race leader, and then he pulled away. So, yeah, also on Friday, after he crashed twice, Alex said that, well, I was a bit overconfident. I went over the limit, which sounded to me like Mark. Many times he said that. So I would say that Alex is reaching this level of confidence that he's starting to race. I said that it was going to sound risky, but you know that this victory, it could have been signed by Mark.
You know, I've never heard it put like that, but now you mention it, that's a very good point. That if you didn't know any better, you'd have thought this was his brother. The crashes on Friday, figuring out where the limit is, but still having that incredible speed. And then maybe not the best start in the world in the race, only made the one critical pass, got in front, and then had the pace to pull away. I think the fact it was a Yamaha may have had something to do with that, just a little bit. But I think you're spot on. I think that very much felt like a Marc Marquez win, but his younger brother's now done it, which is probably a terrifying thought for the rest of the field. I mean, wait, there's two of them. That can't be ideal, Richard. But it was a perfectly executed race. I mean, the start maybe wasn't the best, but he was able to follow Fabio around. He pounced when the moment came. That turn one overtake, it was the overtake of the weekend, according to the fans. And that was it. It was game over. He was basically 0.8 in front a lap later, and that was the end of it, really.
Yeah, and I must say, if we're going to say that this has the marks of Marc Marquez on it, the questions from the media comparing Alex to his brother are not going to go anywhere, unfortunately. Nope. I think maybe Alex would have, in some small part of his mind, hoped that that's the end of the questions now. He's won a race. But look at how Yuri has seen it. It could just be the beginning of a lot more. but it's true. And I think it was a really mentally challenging weekend for Alex, where a lot of things could have gone wrong. We've talked about Friday. Saturday could have also been demoralizing, because on Saturday he just followed Mark, which is kind of the standard script for the season so far, and didn't really have a challenge for him. And then on Sunday, two things, you know, Mark fell off. Alex was not in the lead yet, so he could have thought, oh, great, I've still got work to do. I mean, a mentally weak rider could have interpreted that as something being against him, because Mark finally falls off and I'm not automatically in the lead. I still have to go and pass Bagnaia Quartararo. And he just dealt with that, and he dealt with it really well. He didn't panic. He also didn't go too soon on Fabio. He showed a lot of patience, which was another thing that you could have taken from Mark's usual script. He took his time because he knew he was faster than the Yamaha. And then he just rehearsed the move and got it done as planned, by the looks of it. And then the other big mental challenge for him in that race was leading it for so long. And he admitted himself that he has started to think about, wow, I'm going to win my first race in front of my home fans at the track where I would choose to do it with my family here. And he admitted that was tough, and he had to give himself a talking to a couple of times and say, come on, focus, focus, focus. And he did it all to perfection. So well done to Mark and to Alex. Apologies. And
perfect.
I've got a feeling you're not going to edit that out.
No, I'm keeping that in 100%.
But it's a real paddock pleasing win. I think he's just a popular guy, a nice guy. He's given us a lot of time and shown a lot of patience with all those questions about Mark over the years, and particularly this year. So fair play to him. Well done. I think everyone's really happy to see him break through.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, he was starting to get a little bit frustrated at some of those questions in regards to comparisons to Mark. And look, I openly admit, we're all members of the press to a degree. We're all journalists to an extent. We have to ask the difficult questions sometimes, even though we know there's a risk we might get a bit of clap back as a result. We saw it a couple of rounds ago that it was like, oh, like Mark's going to let you win one, or you know all those sorts of irritating questions, which, look, they don't sound that silly to us, but when you're Alex Marquez and you're trying 100% to, you know, stand out on your own two feet and be that guy, when your brother is, we all know his brother is probably the quickest guy in the world right now, one of the greatest of all time, I can't relate to that. I'm an eldest brother of three. I wrote about this on my own website. Sometimes it must be incredibly frustrating being the little brother. And I was never able to relate to that until I saw this Grand Prix weekend. And yeah, I mean, I wrote about this on my own website, talking about how the brotherly comparisons will never, ever go away, because how can you, when your brother's one of the greatest ever and has been such a needle mover for this sport? Like, Alex Marquez debuted the same year Mark won the Moto2 title, 2012. And the people that knew what was about to happen. And it by the time Alex got to the top flight, it's 2019. And by that point, Mark's got six MotoGP world championships at the highest level. And we're starting to have GOAT discussions about Mark, and having to stand out on your own two feet. besides that must be unbelievably difficult and full of pressure and full of unfair expectations. And we say that now after a handful of races in the 2025 season. Alex Marquez on last year's bike is now leading the world championship again. And this time it feels like it's a little bit more well-earned compared to maybe Cota, when we all knew Mark should have won that race. We all know how dominant he can be in Austin. And that one felt a little bit fluky, I'm going to be honest with you guys. But this, now knowing a little bit more about Alex's form, a little bit more about how strong he's been this season, how consistent he's been this season, why can't he win the title, Yuri? I mean, why not? The way the man's riding right now, he's going to be in the picture for a while because he's not making mistakes.
I'm going to say that I made the risky assumption in first place. I'm not going to make it twice. What I'm convinced is that this victory has given him a big boost and it's been a huge relief for him. So let's see. I think we're probably going to meet a new Alex from now on. So let's see what he's capable of doing in the next races. He was in control on Sunday. And at the same time, I think that all the questions that the media and the people have been asking to Alex were totally legit. I mean, because the question mark was there. Now, we don't have that question mark anymore because he's been able to win a MotoGP race. So now let's see if this relief puts him in a different dimension or in a, let's say, different spot. And given the inconsistency of the new GP25, let's see, because maybe it's better to be a bit more conservative on the Ducati and keep going, not making any mistakes, and keep the counter going. So I'm not able to say that he's going to be a title contender in 7, 8, 9 races time, but at the same time, I'm not brave enough to say that he's not going to be a title contender. So let's see. I mean, he's the one who's made the best strategy so far. And what we know is that the mistakes on Sunday count double. And Mark has won 3 races and has crashed twice on Sunday. So it means that he needs to adjust.
Definitely. I mean, it reminds me very much of how Jorge Martin won the World Championship last year, especially in the second half of the year. Bagnaia was winning Grand Prix a bit more frequently, but it was Martin racking up second places. I think he had something like 17 or 18 of them last year, once you factor in the sprints. And he pointed his way to the title. And there's no shame in that. You win championships on your bad days, not your good ones. That's what I always tell people. And it was his consistency that got him over the line, despite the fact Pecco Bagnaia won 11 Grand Prix in a season, which has only happened, I want to say, 3 or 4 times in the top flight ever. So, yeah, we've seen people win titles, maybe while not necessarily being the fastest man on track or being the fastest guy over a weekend. Sometimes waiting for the other guy to make mistakes can win you a title. And it's funny, because Yuri set this up perfectly for me. Marc Marquez, who, as Yuri mentioned, has won 3 Grand Prix this year, but has now made 2 critical mistakes in races, wasn't a DNF this time like in Austin, was able to come back with a fairing that, we would probably fail an MOT, let's be frank. There's one for you Brits out there. But he was able to come back and recover and finish in 12th. It's still 4 very precious points. It's better than nothing, but it might as well be a DNF, especially when your arguably main title contender wins the Grand Prix, Rich. And Mark was strangely clueless as to how that crash happened at turn eight. I remember watching the run to the sprint on MotoGP social media and Bagnaia saying that Mark had made a deal with the devil to be so good at those left-handers. And ironically, it was a left-hander that took him out of the running. What did you make of it, mate? And I wonder how much this GP25 might be a factor in this.
Well, yeah, so Mark did revise his, he obviously thought about it overnight after Sunday, because after the test on Monday, he said he did have an explanation for it, which was probably what most amateur observers would have come up with, which was, I was too fast going into the corner, logically enough.
Shocker.
Went in too fast. Okay, not exactly deep science, but that's what he's put it down to now. And yeah, looking at unpicking that a little bit, the real problem is he doesn't know where the limit is. That's why that happened. Austin, he was able to explain because he went on the curb. This one was purely not knowing where the limit was. Is that a GP25 problem? I'm not convinced. There are guys falling off on all sorts of manufacturers. Also in the Grand Prix on Sunday, we saw Honda falling down. We saw GP24 falling with Morbidelli. And of course, we've talked about Friday with Alex, and he is riding a GP24, and he actually talked about exactly the same problem. He didn't know where the limit was. He felt too confident on the bike, and that's a GP24. We've also heard Pecco refer to the same problem, in inverted commas, in Texas a couple of years ago, which I think would have then been a GP23. Maybe it's more of a general Ducati problem if we can put it down to a technical problem at all. We could also just say it's the rider's job to know where the limit is.
It's a very valid point, and this has been Mark and the way he's molded his career, where often he would crash one or two times on a Friday and, okay, that's the limit. I know where it is now. And he won't make a mistake where it actually matters on Saturday and Sunday. And then he knows where the limit is, and then he'll ride to that limit and he wins, or he doesn't crash a bike or something along those lines. I agree. I don't think this is... I mean, I think there is a degree of not figuring out where the limit is on this bike, because both riders have talked extensively about trying to figure it out on the GP25. I know Pecco Bagnaia has been very open about his struggles, but it seems like a very typical Mark sort of incident where maybe he panicked a little bit, not having a particularly great start. He tried to overtake Bagnaia, shades of last year in the Turn 9-10 stadium complex. Even a bit of contact on the way out of it as well. Didn't quite pull it off. And I wonder if he just panicked at that point, tried to gain the time where he knows he's strong, turn 7 and 8, those left-handers off the Pedrosa corner, and overcooked it, and down he goes. And yeah, I'm glad that at least he was a bit more honest on Monday and admitted, yeah, this was probably just me going over the top, rather than Sunday where he was like, I don't know what happened. like, Mark, you've been in this game 11 years now. We know the score. but it is... I mean, it must be frustrating for Mark. I mean, you forget he still only had a handful of Grand Prix on this bike. He's never ridden a GP24. He skipped a year when he went from 23 last year to 25. And if Pecco's words are true about this bike taking some of that feeling away, it probably isn't going to help that he doesn't know where the limit is. I mean, I think I'm giving him a small pass on that one, but it is a bit of a funny one, Yuri, and I wonder, has Ducati accidentally blunted their own ridiculously strong bike with the GP24? Because the scoreboard doesn't lie. A GP24 leads the world championship right now, and Pecco and Mark have both had their struggles as to why they're behind in that scoreboard right now.
I think this one is hard to tell, because with the GP25, Mark has been super fast, and I mean, he was gonna win in Austin. The crash in Austin, everybody could, I mean, even the, like Richard said, even the amateurs, I mean, could see that he was in the wrong line. in that corner. So I'm not sure about this point, but what I would say is that with Mark, I was convinced that he was not gonna back Pecco's theory about this mystery on the GP25, because it's something that Mark never does. I was convinced that he was, not because I'm a genius, because it has happened during all his career, that he was going to take the blame. It doesn't mean that he doesn't back Pecco's theory, but he prefers to take the blame and say, I was faster in that corner, I was too fast, than blaming the bike. He's never blamed the bike. So he will never say that the GP25 Ducati has a problem. That's my feeling. He prefers to take the blame because it's the perfect answer for the bike. You're not going to change the outcome of that crash anymore because it's the past. It's in the past. But you can help the brand and not damage the Ducati brand by taking the blame and saying, I was a bit too, let's say, overconfident on that corner. And again, don't forget that he's been super fast. So crashing in Austin was a big surprise, and crashing in Jerez after what happened on Saturday was also a big surprise. So and if you compare the performance of the Ducati with all the other manufacturers, I think that they have a huge advantage.
Definitely. I mean, I think the floor of Ducati has gone up, if you catch my drift, rather than the ceiling, because of the fact that everybody is on the GP24 now. And well, the sprint summed it up perfectly. A Ducati top six lockout. All Ducatis locking out the top six positions. And I think even the slowest of the fastest laps in that sprint, I think it was by Fabio Di Giantonio, was still quicker than any quickest lap from anybody below them or out of those top six. It was complete and utter dominance by Ducati. They have such a huge advantage on the rest of the field on paper and on raw pace that they can afford to have these crashes and still figure things out and still have a huge gain on the rest of the field. So, yeah, I think there's absolutely something to that. And, yeah, Mark has always kind of fallen on that grenade when it comes to, you know, I mean, when he was at Honda, he never blamed Honda, even though we as pundits and we as journalists all knew that Honda was a death trap at that point in time. And he still would not throw shade at Honda and criticize them for the bike that they were producing. He was still incredibly diplomatic about it, even though it was breaking him in two half the time. We all saw it. We all knew it. But he would never be the first guy to admit that. Maybe that is just the Mark thing. Go on, Yuri.
Sorry, Richard, just one more thing. So he's the only one that has never blamed the tires, Michelin. So I'm just putting this on the table as a matter of how strategically he plays this game. And it doesn't mean that he didn't have, let's say, not really good tire. I mean, it has happened to anybody on the grid, but he's the one who's never blamed.
It's a very good point that you mentioned it again. He's never blamed Michelin for any of these issues, even though other riders have carefully worded it, but have said, hey, this may have been a bit of a dud tire. You know, who's to say? But no, I think you're absolutely spot on, Yuri. I think you're absolutely right. He's very diplomatic in where he takes accountability and where he doesn't. And sometimes it's a bit like Max Verstappen in Formula One. Sometimes it's more about what he doesn't say more than what he does say, especially when you cut a corner. That's one for you F1 fans out there. Yes, I mean, we got to talk a little bit about Pecco as well. He's won the last three Spanish Grand Prix. Was trying to make it four in a row, couldn't do it on this occasion. Third in the sprint and third in the Grand Prix again. this time with a Yamaha in front of him as well as a Ducati. And he's been very vocal, Richard, about the sprint races in particular, that essentially the smaller sprint tank is causing him problems. It doesn't let him push how he wants to. But is it going to be another year where Pecco Bagnaia is going to hemorrhage points in the sprint? Because that's, I think that's a big reason why he didn't win the championship last year. He was just coughing points up on Saturday. And in the Grand Prix again, you could maybe make a case that this wasn't Pecco at full capacity again.
Yeah, that sprint thing was probably his number one issue coming into this weekend. And it's almost like he's come away from it with two issues, because the Grand Prix really didn't go well. He said it wasn't quite as bad as the sprint, but as you say, he got stuck behind a Yamaha, which incidentally I think shouldn't be there. It's kind of almost all down to Fabio, but we'll get to that. Pecco is not quite as diplomatic as Mark. He's not afraid to question the technical package he has, and he's also not afraid to reveal his struggles, which you could argue with that as a strategy, that he shouldn't be revealing weakness. I don't think he's a poker player somehow, or Pecco.
No. But prefers roulette wheel, clearly.
Yeah, and with the sprint thing, he obviously did have a lot more to think about following the Grand Prix than he might have had on Sunday morning. He might even have changed his test plan, because it was interesting that when he was asked on Monday after the test, whether he had done anything to work on the sprint fuel tank, said there wasn't time for that. So didn't seem to be top of his priority list, although I'm sure it's not entirely just his decision, and it's a broader Ducati decision. But it's not like he's found a solution for that particular issue heading into Le Mans. He's admitted that himself.
I do, because I'm a nerd. I kept a spreadsheet of all the, if we had a sprint table and a Grand Prix points table. Bagnaia has already coughed up 30 points to Marc Marquez in the five sprints we've had this season, because I think that's all, like, Marc's perfect in sprint form. He's won five in a row. Only Jorge Martin's ever done the same, where he's won five sprints in a row. He's 60 out of 60 on sprints. Bagnaia's only scored 30 points in sprints so far this year. He's already given up more than a Grand Prix's worth of points on Saturdays alone compared to his teammates. Not ideal. Just got stuck in dirty air behind the Yamaha. And honestly, I think it's a bit unfair. We've left it nearly half an hour in before we talk about Fabio Quartararo, so let's give the man his flowers. Incredible weekend. The first Yamaha pole position, and I think it was 1,160 days. I think it was Indonesia 2022 was the last time we had a Yamaha on pole position. And yeah, first podium in a year and a half for the Yamaha brand in general. Second place from Fabio. He was given the first MotoGP Rider of the Race award. This had nothing to do with Liberty guys being in attendance. No, we would borrow one from F1. But I can't really argue with the fans on that one. If you had Fabio as Rider of the Race, I probably did too, to be honest. But I mean, Yuri, what a weekend for Fabio Quartararo, and that's got to be a little bit of a shot in the arm and a little bit of hope for Yamaha after a tricky season so far.
Well, again, I think it was super, as you mentioned, it was super unexpected, even for Fabio. I remember him saying on Friday that he was super shocked of how fast he was able to go, and that first he wanted to understand why. Because in Jerez, in a normally low grip level track, the Yamaha was riding super well. So in the end, we're gonna have 2-3 more races to find out if the job done by all the Yamaha crew led by Max Bartolini has finally find something to believe in. From the rider's point of view, there's no doubt about his talent. I mean, that's out of the question. Now we need to find if Yamaha is good enough. We need more from the others, that's for sure. I mean, Yamaha cannot rely only on one rider of the full crew that they have, and they need to start showing something. I remember talking with some Yamaha Japanese guys, and he said, I mean, they are super honest. They are always super honest. Of course, it's off the record, but they say it's all on him. It was him. It was Fabio. So, which is something that for, let's say, a non-Japanese brand, we would say, well, yeah, it's the job payoff. We are pushing. Like, yes, they are pushing, but in this specific time, they say it was all him. So full credit to him. And let's expect that the Yamaha can help him, and not only him, especially Alex Rins. Alex Rins is in a difficult moment. So he needs to deliver, and he needs to deliver fast, sooner than later.
20 seconds, the difference between Fabio Quartararo and Alex Rins over a 25-lap race. I mean, so I'm, the rough math tells me that's 0.8 of a second per lap.
Yeah.
That's significant. That's a big problem. And I think you're absolutely right. I think it also goes to show you that I think Yamaha is experiencing what Honda was going through a couple of years ago with Mark, how lopsided, how top-heavy their team is. Quartararo has been exceptional so far this season in extracting everything he can out of that package. And then the rest of their riders, Jack Miller, is unfortunately still crashing quite frequently. Miguel Oliveira, well, he gets a pass. He's been injured, unfortunately. The man, if he didn't have bad luck, he'd have no luck. Horrible. I think he's had 5 injuries since 2023 started. Poor man. Please get well soon, Miggy. We miss you. So Augusto Fernandez is going to be limited in what he can do. And Alex Rins, who is just not able to figure out this Yamaha and be able to clip. You know, Alex Rins is better than what he's showing on track right now. We've seen it with Suzuki, how incredible a rider he can be. But being 0.8 a second off your teammate is unacceptable. I mean, it's like watching Red Bull in Formula One. You know, seeing everybody try to stack up to Max Verstappen, and it's the same principle that this guy's brilliant on here. Everybody else can't figure this out, and it leads to difficult conversations like the one we're having right now. But I personally have said to people before, Fabio Quartararo is the rider I wish most was on a Ducati right now, as I'd love to see what he could do with one of those bikes and how he could challenge the best riders in the world. Because I've been telling
you, he had a chance.
He was too loyal for his own good. I said it after the pole position on social media. I was like, why were you so loyal to Yamaha? Why? I get it. And I can think of several million reasons why he would be. But it, as a fan first, it frustrates me when you know what he was capable of and he's on a bike that we know is not as competitive, Rich. But it's hard not to still at least tip the hand, say that was a phenomenal weekend, and I just wish Yamaha could give us more. But they're starting to tease that now with the V4 as well, aren't they?
Yeah, I'm quite enjoying him being on the Yamaha. I actually take a slightly different point of view because I like these storylines and battles. I mean, if all the best riders are on a Ducati, you don't get to see Fabio making all the difference for a week bike. I think it's quite a nice storyline as well, but you got to get into it as quite a deep fan to appreciate that. And sure, if he was on a Ducati, we'd probably get more wheel-to-wheel racing at the front more often. But yeah, as you say, Yamaha are really pushing, teasing us with the V4, which is another thing long overdue in MotoGP in recent years, is some kind of real technical innovation, let's call it, that anyone can understand, not just small aero parts or tiny little things nobody can see, but, you know, a whole new engine with a different philosophy. I think that's something everyone can understand and really get into watching whether it's going to work. And seeing Yamaha daring to do a kind of parallel development in public, is great. It's fantastic that the engineers are also so open, as you say, Yuri. So we'll get to hear exactly how it's going. But it is early days. They've really just had a little run out at Valencia. It's too soon to talk about performance of the V4 at all. I think it's just one to keep an eye on. It'll be interesting if it is as fast as the current bike, just fast forwarding to a moment where that happens, how Yamaha will make a decision. There is obviously that little bit of human nature that when you're invested in something, really heavily invested, you've gone to all that effort to make a V4, you might be tempted to just, we're going to use it. And maybe it wouldn't be the right decision. There's going to be so much interesting storylines to watch with that as it goes forward. But Fabio has given everyone more reason to keep pushing because he's shown that even if the bike isn't quite there, he's going to take it to the front. Heaven knows what he can manage when it really is the best bike, if that ever happens, whether it's the V4 or the current one. They just have plenty of reasons to keep working because of what Fabio did on
the funny thing is that the good result arrives now that everybody's talking about the before. I can imagine the Yamaha boss is saying, not now. I mean, we've had more than a year to have the result, to achieve the result. And now that everybody's talking about the before, that we're investing a lot of money and lots of resources into that project, now we have finally see the light. Let's see, because if they have chosen to go in that direction, it means that the margin to improve is higher. But yeah, it's funny to see that it exactly happens now.
You know what's also funny about that? Yamaha's just leapt up to second in the Manufacturers' Championship as a result of that second place. It's the first time any non-Ducati has finished on a podium this season. Sprint or Grand Prix, they're dangerously close if the maths works out to being out of tier D of concessions if this holds up. I think they're at 38% of Ducati's maximum point total. That if you're over 40% when we get to Brno in August, they'll be out of tier D, and that means they can no longer develop their engine. That might be a problem later on if they actually want to have a V4 they can run. Yamaha might be too good for their own good. Something to keep an eye on. Get your calculators out after every Grand Prix weekend. I do. Because like I said, I'm a nerd. It's what I do. But they are at 38% of the maximum point total right now, and they are hovering dangerously close to being out of tier D. Who would have guessed that at the start of this season, that Yamaha would be the ones leading the chase to on Ducati and potentially being the first team out of Japan to be out of the bottom tier. Keep an eye on that over the course of the next few weekends. A couple of things I wanted to get in before we get out of here. Maverick Viñales. Qatar wasn't a fluke. Clearly was not a fluke. Back-to-back weekends within 4 seconds of the win was the quiet man on the back of that second group with Bagnaia and Quartararo. Maverick was right there with them. Fourth place again, and that KTM across the board, not a bad weekend at all. Fourth, sixth, seventh, and ninth, all four of their bikes in the top 10. Not a bad weekend by all accounts. Pedro Acosta now as well finding out since then that he had arm pump during that race and still was able to get into the top 10. A wild one, but it's been a difficult week for KTM if you've been reading the news as well. They've had to cease their street bike production, so another. A lot of rumors, a lot of news swirling that their financial future is not secure. You could probably guess that already, but more news. I should really say that it's not looking great out there for them. Again, maybe Maverick giving them a bit of hope here, Richard, because back-to-back weekends, Maverick has been top KTM, and it looks like he's found something on that bike that everybody else hasn't.
Yeah, it's just like Yamaha, isn't it? But people back at the factory need a reason to keep working because there are some technical and other difficulties, and Maverick is providing it at the moment. And I think as much as anything, he's showing the same thing Fabio is showing, that how much riders can make a difference in MotoGP still, which is a good thing. I think the difference between him and Acosta can, as much as anything, just be put down to where they are as riders. Maverick is looking incredibly confident. He's now into his 30s, so that makes him a proper experienced rider. He's 10 years older than Acosta, remember. He's learned a lot over his career. Yeah, and you can see he's putting things into practice that he's learned. He's really enjoying it. And I think it might be as much that as that he has found something on the bike. And then at the other end, you have Acosta, who there's a lot of speculation about his future. He has arm pump. There's a few things going on. And maybe he just isn't riding 100% for all of those reasons. And it might be nothing more than that. It was a good result for KTM in the Grand Prix, but let's remember there was quite a bit of attrition, like Texas, seeing Bastianini getting up to places that he doesn't belong at the moment is also because a few people fell off. But yeah, possibly a slight step in the right direction for the manufacturer as a whole. And in the test, they talked about how they needed to kind of bring together all the different things that the riders have been trying, because they've been running different kinds of bikes, different kinds of setups over the early rounds. And in the test, they try to pull the best of everything, I think. And they openly admitted they were doing that. But Maverick will probably have have a lot to say about the way it should go, given that he's kind of the lead rider at the moment, not Acosta.
Yeah, but that's definitely a surprising. God, you made me feel old for a second there, talking about the Mavericks been here for 10 years now. I mean, I remember when he first debuted with Yamaha, he was meant to be the anti-Marquez, the guy that might be able to stop him, and it's just not quite worked out. I mean, we could talk about Maverick's career in three separate podcasts to even get to this point. Such an enigmatic rider. And you're never quite sure what he's going to give you. And right now he's riding as well as he ever has on that KTM, back-to-back, really, really strong performances, even if the tire pressure in Qatar took away a podium. For me, the proof of the pudding was in the eating. We all saw how strong he was in Qatar. And again, really, really strong here, running with Pecco, running with Fabio at the peak of his powers. Another weekend, he's on the podium, in my opinion. So, yeah, really, really strong. Oh, and a bit of a shameless plug. If you want to see an interview with Maverick's crew chief, Manu, you can do so on the motorsport.com YouTube channel as well. Big shout out to my colleague, Charlotte, for putting that one together as well. So do check that out if you haven't already. Before we go, gents, any other takeaways from the test, you know, besides the small case of a nationwide power cut, as you do, totally normal situation. I mean, anything else, Yuri, that jumped out to you on Monday's test that was worth mentioning, or something that, you know, caught your eye?
I would outline the how happy the both Yamaha riders show themselves because of the performance of the new engine, not the before, but the an upgrade that they say that it gave them a couple of kph more than the old one. They are going to use it straight away in Le Mans. And let's see. I think it's Yamaha, apart from Alex Marquez, has been the name of the weekend. So I just hope that they can keep going and then keep following these dynamics and do it again in Le Mans. So that's in my opinion, the thing that I would outline the most.
Anything else from you on top of that, Rich?
The Yamaha storyline continuing is also the thing that caught my eye, and the fact that Rins was happy as well after just being at the back end of the field while Fabio was at the front on the weekend. So nice to see him bounce back on the test and feel happy. And I guess the other thing is also Bagnaia being really, really slow. the lap times don't mean much at all. It was a very windy day as well at Jerez, so quite different from the race weekend. Made it difficult to compare anything to anything else. But you can't help notice that Pecco was way down on the times. You can't help notice. But he did say that he found something, not in terms of that sprint tank, but he did say he found something positive. They're going to use it at Le Mans. He seemed a little bit happier than he did during the race weekend. So maybe that's a sign he'll come to the party in France.
Maybe. We'll have to wait and see next week. I mean, again, talk about back-to-back races with rocking atmospheres. It's worth mentioning one more time. I go to the top of the show. 101,000 people at Jerez on race day. I cannot remember the last time we had that many people for the Spanish Grand Prix. Atmosphere was rocking. We had the Marquez grandstands were going crazy for obvious reasons. For you WWE fans out there, we had a lot of Jey Uso yeeting from the crowd as well, up and down, hands up and down like crazy. It was a fantastic atmosphere. It was great to watch on TV as it was going down. Those are the celebrations you always remember. And hey, we'll probably get 100,000 again next week at the French Grand Prix at Le Mans, which has become one of the real blue ribbon events on the MotoGP calendar now. It's been voted best Grand Prix for the last couple of years. And yeah, the French love their bikes now. They're going to have a shot in the arm with Fabio Quartararo as well, coming off an incredible podium finish. Although, ironically, we did do a video with him the other day where he said his nemesis was Le Mans. So that's going to be fun to see if Fabio can finally get a big result for his home Grand Prix rather than what Alex Marquez did for his. But that'll just about do it for Tank Slappers this time around. We'll be back just after next week to review the French Grand Prix. Hope you guys enjoyed the show. I've been Dre Harrison. They've been Yuri Puigdemont and Richard Asher. Until next time, thank you very much for listening, and we'll see you guys next time. Sayonara.